This is Theron, and welcome to another episode of Michigan Hidden History. This week, we will talk about the Kresge Foundation. Before we start, don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple and rate the podcast on Spotify. I will be reading the reviews, the ones that you leave on Apple, and I have my very special guest and partner in crime in finding all these markers. Mario is joining me once again, so give it up. Give a big round of applause for him.
Well, I appreciate everybody for the round of the applause that I hear all around the world. I am back, and if you haven't heard our last podcast with the Greenwood Cemetery, I recommend that you give it a listen, because that's where I make my appearance. And you know what? I'm more than happy to be back with my boy Theron on this episode, because we got a lot to talk about, and it's going to be an amazing and fun episode. So enjoy and start listening, guys. Let's have a great time, right, Theron?
Yes. So let's learn some history. So we will start with the man who was behind the foundation, Kresge, because it is always good to find out about the person who's behind the organization.
So let's jump into this, Theron. The Kresge Foundation was founded by Sebastian Spearing Kresge, actually more commonly known as SS. His parents were Pennsylvania Dutch farmers. And on July 31st, 1867, SS was born to Sebastian Sr. and Catherine Kunkel Kresge in Kreskeville, Pennsylvania, named for the Kreskes. Kresge graduated from Eastman's Business College in 1889. And then after graduation, he worked a variety of jobs. His jobs included being a bookkeeper and a half owner of a bakery. He met F.W. Woolworth when he was working at a hardware store. F.W. is the man who began the five and dime stores, which is a discount store where everything is worth a nickel or dime. So like the modern day dollar store. Thanks to men like F.W. and S.S., we have discount stores and dollar stores. And we'll begin to that next. But Theron here, looking at Mr. Kresge here, who has time for being a bookkeeper and a bakery owner? This guy was busy. Busy man.
So, so like my brother, who is also very busy, he works two jobs and he has time to hang out with friends and stuff like that. I'm surprised. But I mean, he's working a variety of jobs. I mean, it's typical for a college person right after college to work a variety of jobs, because probably he couldn't find something right away that he didn't like. But I mean, yeah, he's busy, and as you will see in the future of this podcast episode, that he's going to slow down and it's going to work to his advantage, and he's going to make millions of dollars in the future. But for right now, yes, he is a busy person.
Yes, he is. And if we're talking about these five and dime stores, I wish they existed today.
But they do.
Well, there's very little, not many.
They do in like you said, in the modern day dollar stores. That's what technically it is, because he would run the five and dime stores, but after the I think after World War II, he would bring the prices up to a dollar, so they would be considered dollar stores, not five and dime stores anymore.
Yes, and I believe he his five and dime stores shut down in the late 1900s, because I mean, for some reason it wasn't working out for him. But all those five and dime stores really shut down. But now you have the dollar stores, so. But hey, we can't even call it the dollar store anymore. We call it the $1.50 dollar tree. How about that?
I mean, we could, but when you go there, isn't everything a dollar or $1.05 basically everything almost everything there is, unless no, you're.
I think it's a book, isn't it book 15 now?
I don't think so, because up here where I'm at, we have $2 stores, a Family Dollar and a Dollar General, and they're both and they both sell stuff for a dollar still.
You still got dollars, because down here everything's above a dollar.
So, as you could guess, Mario and I live in two separate parts of Michigan. As you may know from previous episodes that he was on, Mario decided to stay in Metro Detroit area, and I decided to move up north to the middle of nowhere, basically, and teach.
Zombieland.
I know, Zombieland. So we're talking about two different places. So he's talking about Metro Detroit, where it's all concentrated and where there's tons of people and stuff like that. And I'm talking about a place that has, at the last census, maybe like less than 2,000 people living in the area. So, yeah. So I think it depends on where you live, because if you live in a large city, the prices will be higher because more people go shopping there and the demand is higher, rather than if you live in a smaller community with less than 2,000 people, there is less demand for stuff, so they can keep the prices the same.
And near, I don't know how you do it out there. I just still don't know to this day how you do it.
Well, what do you mean by that? As you don't know how I do it, how I live up here?
How you live up there? I'm telling you, I've been telling Theron for you know how many months here to come back down to Metro Detroit.
So I moved.
I know you miss it.
I moved here up in August, and he's been telling me ever since August that I should move back down. But I'm loving it up here. I mean, the people are nice. I got to go to a Super Bowl party at one of my students' houses. I don't think that would ever happen downstate. But
no, it wouldn't.
Yeah, it wouldn't. but the people up here are all nice. I don't have an issue with anyone. I've never gotten pulled over up here. I went 90 miles per hour past a Mackinac County Sheriff's car and never got pulled over on US-2.
Yeah, that's right. You did go 90.
So the speed limit on US-2 is 55, and the max is 60 because you can go 5 over. So I was going 90 on US-2 and went right past the sheriff car, and he didn't even stop me. He didn't even care a clue in the world what I was doing.
Well, he saw that you were a teacher, man, and he did not care.
So I told the Super Bowl party this story, and he's like, "Yeah, it may have been me. I may have been going somewhere to handle a drug bust that happened, and I wouldn't want to pull you over and delay someone. But it was not a canine car; it was a regular like." Patrol vehicle.
Wow. what a cool cop though.
But yeah.
And if you're listening, Mr. Cop, next time pull Mr. Savarno over here. Pull Theron over. Make him learn his lesson. Don't give him a break. If you have a drug bust and this guy's going 90, make sure to give him a ticket.
I didn't know this, but cop cars have a front radar, a side radar, and a rear radar.
Yeah, they do have they do.
So if you're in front of a cop, it will use the front radar. If you're passing a cop, it will use the side radar. And if you pass the cop, it will be using its rear radar and trying to catch you like that. So I will be very careful when you're passing cops, because knowing that little bit of information, I will never go fast in front of a cop unless you're not in that jurisdiction.
Yes.
Because I found a cop from Rose Common Roscommon County, that is like couple miles, like an hour north of Metro Detroit in Oakland County.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's way out of his jurisdiction by 2-3 counties. So I just like went past him a bunch of times going above the speed limit. He can't do it, nothing. It's not even his jurisdiction. If he pulls me over, he has to call Oakland County or Genesee County or whatever county and have them come and give me the ticket.
I don't understand why cops go out of their jurisdictions anyways. They just need to stay with it.
Unless they're in a cop chase.
Which I highly doubt he was, but...
He was just cruising. He was cruising along. But unless you're in a cop chase, that's the only way that I can guess that you'd go outside of your jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. He must have been doing something.
So, I told my mom this, and she's like, maybe he followed someone down from Roscommon. Or maybe he's partnering up with Oakland County or Macomb County or Wayne County or Genesee County to do something.
But he honestly could have been, man.
Yeah, and he wanted it to be official, so he took his car.
All I gotta say is that take cops seriously.
Yes, please do, and please don't go 90 past a cop just because I did it, because sometimes cops can be... fussy.
There's never an excuse to go 90 unless you're and need to go to the hospital, or I guess you're Theron.
Unless you're having fun on the road, I would not go 90 past a cop, because some cops are very like, and will actually like pull you over for that. So that is something that I will tell you not to do. And I was just lucky that he didn't pull me over.
Yes.
Because if he did, I think I would lose my driver's license and I would not have a car at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think you would.
Going 30 over the speed limit. Yeah, no. No.
No. No, that's a lot of points. Yeah. Good luck.
I know, right? But yeah, small community, I love it. I'm not really a big city kid anymore. I think I realized that in college. But, yeah. So, that's a little bit about me and who I am and who Mario is and what we do. We're both teachers, by the way, if you haven't guessed that.
Yes. The greatest career ever.
Yeah, sometimes the most rewarding, and then sometimes the most frustrating, as I had today. But, yeah.
Well, Theron, lo and behold, let's find out. And believe it or not, Theron, guess what? He could not run these stores by himself. So he partnered up with his brother-in-law, Charles Wilson. He needed a partner here to even run these stores, because he couldn't do it by himself because he didn't have enough knowledge. And then they ran the Kresge and Wilson store in 7 different cities for 7 years. Then in 1912, as he did with the JG stores, he bought Wilson's shares and incorporated his new company, SS Kresge Company, in Delaware. At that time, he owned 85 stores with over $10 million, which is about $289 million in today's money. By 1918, his company, S.S. Kresge, was listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And in 1925, Kresge retired as president at the age of 58 and a millionaire, but he stayed on as a chairman. In 1962, he decided as a chairman and probably the majority shareholder to change the name from S.S. Kresge Company to Kmart. Yes, the phenomenal store in Michigan that, you know, today should be here. But it's not. But yes, Kmart. And the first store opened in Garden City, Michigan, and he would unfortunately die 4 years later at the age of 99. What a sad thing to hear, Theron, with Kmart. I miss Kmart. I wish it was still here. It had everything that you needed. It was one of the best convenience stores I've ever seen.
So funny story. So the table I'm sitting at right now, guess where it was bought?
Oh my goodness, could it be? Could it be Kmart?
It could be Kmart.
It couldn't be Kmart, is it?
It could be Kmart. My dad told me that he bought this table that I'm sitting at right now from Kmart in the early 2000s.
Wow. And you probably bought it for a great deal. It's probably like 50% off. You know, Kmart always with the great deals.
And it is real wood.
Wow. Where did you see? Kmart? The best things. And has the best memories, by the way. A lot of memories at Kmart.
I know. I remember there used to be a Kmart on 18 Mile and DeQuinder where Kroger is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go in there with my mom and brother, and my mom would go shopping. Okay. And my brother and I would go to the video game section and play demo games of Madden on the PlayStation 2 that they would have there. Or demo games of NBA or whatever demo game was running there. So when that Kmart was sadly closing, they took away all those consoles and they started to slowly sell out of the games. So that is how I knew when Kmart was going bankrupt, was when they stopped doing the demos on the consoles that they had there.
Yes, I remember, you know, going to the stores for those, just for that. You know, if you, my mom said, you know, let's go to, you know, Kmart and let's go get a couple of things, you know, I would, you know, scooch off and go to the video game section. You had the controller right there, right? And you could play any game. I think that was like one of the best things ever. They need to bring that back. That was the only reason why we went to the grocery stores.
I know, right? To demo games and to play video games. But
yeah,
and my brother and I would take turns because there would be only one controller and there was no parent, so we would get into lots of fights on who should play the game first or who should get the next turn or when we should get the next turn. But those were always fun times. Was in Kmart we would go and we would play the games.
Yeah, you're not the only one. And I hope everyone that's listening, you know, had a chance. If you're in Michigan, to go to Kmart and play the games.
And
it was a blast.
I know the closest I've come was so I think it was last year. I went to Best Buy, and they had the original Pac-Man, the arcade machine Pac-Man.
The original, wow.
One of the replicas of that, and I just sat there and played Pac-Man for about 2 hours while the guy, I dropped off my car so my car could get fixed, and yes. My dad couldn't pick me up, so I usually just go a mile north and go to like Target, Best Buy, and all those stores are on there. Oakland Mall is right there. And the last year I went to Best Buy and I played Pac-Man for about an hour and no one cared. It was the best thing ever. And I'm like, this is amazing. So I took a picture for my Google Photos memories that will come up in about a few months now.
You're telling me no one cared, no one even said, why is this man playing for an hour?
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
that was how our Kmart experience was, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, usually the store employees, you know, saw like a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, and they did not care at all.
I know. Now if you touch something, they became so anal about it. Like, yeah.
They would. I'm not even kidding. They would.
Like, I can't, as an adult going to the stores, I cannot touch, like, they have phones out, right? So every single time I want to go look at the phone section, I can't even touch the phone without the salesperson going anal and yelling at me. And this is me as an adult. I'm very careful. I have my own phone. I don't really care. I just want to see what the new features are on the phone. And he's yelling at me.
And I don't know why they're so rude about it. I don't get it.
And parents these days will not let their children out of their sight. Like, oh my God. Like, really? Like, your child has a cell phone. I never had a cell phone when I grew up, and my parents would let us roam around Kmart, would let us roam around Meijer. Any store that we went to, we were able to, like, roam around and do stuff on our own. But these days, these parents are like, yeah, you can't leave my side. What? Why?
They're like, little Johnny, what if he does that? You know, where are you going?
I know, like, you know where, all I can be is confined to the store. You can come find me on my phone. You can call me on my phone, which we didn't have the luxury of, did we, Mario? When we were kids. No, of having a cell phone at like 10, 11, 12 years old and roaming around the store. We didn't have a cell phone. Our parents knew where we were at all times.
They did know, you know, at some points, but, you know, we didn't have that cell phone. But, you know, they trusted us enough to know that, you know, if we needed anything, you know, to contact them, that we'd somehow find a way.
And we would go looking through the store for them, like, I mean, normal kids.
And then that trust was at Kmart. They knew that we weren't doing anything.
I know. They knew that we were at the games, playing video games the whole time that they were shopping. That was like literally the best. I wish if Kmart comes back, I wish that feature will be there in Kmart stores.
Yes. That would be amazing though.
So some background history on Kmart. So Kmart, yes, was made because of Kresge in 1962, but Kmart was sadly acquired by Sears.
Trash Sears.
Hold on, I'm trying to find it.
Appliance
store. It was bought out by Sears in 2005, and in when did Sears go bankrupt? Do you know?
Just recently. It wasn't too long
ago. Yeah. So Sears filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy 2 years ago, June of 2019, and that made Kmart closed all their stores, and also Sears closed off all their stores, and Sears had to sell their very famous Sears Tower in Chicago in order to make the payments. So, as of January 31st, 2022, so last month, 10 stores of Kmart are in operation.
And they're probably north?
So, we're going to... I
would see them being maybe north. I don't see any, you know, southern parts of Michigan, but
they're all over the country now. So
So then they're probably, there might be one on the east then, a couple on the east and a couple on the west. But
yeah, so that's all. Like the one Best Buy that is still open is, I think, somewhere in Alaska.
The Best Buy. Wow.
No, no, not Best Buy. Blockbuster. Sorry. I don't know why Best Buy came to mind, but Blockbuster. Yes, the one.
Blockbuster.
either in Oregon or in Alaska. I think is the last one.
That is Alaska
or Oregon. I don't know which state it is, but I can do a quick research. Blockbuster last store in Bend, Oregon is the last Blockbuster on Earth. It is continuing to compete with Netflix, and they are making this like a museum where people can go in there and watch movies in like a couch. They have a couch, they have popcorn, they have TV. So you can rent a movie and you can watch it there.
Popcorn and TV? Why can't I get in on that?
So if you go to Bend, Oregon, we can definitely do that.
Yeah, I would definitely be down.
So, yeah. So, like, So right now, Kmart is under new management. As of all of Sears Holdings are, they are under the management of ESL brand.
Mm-hmm.
So, let me see. I'll tell you who ESL is. So ESL. Actually, yeah. So ESL is a private hedge fund that bought the rights to Sears and Kmart, probably at a very cheap price.
It had to have been at a cheap price.
But yeah. So it's going to tell me right here. This is a hedge fund that had the that helped Kmart and Sears merge with each other. So that's why they got the deal, and they still hold the rights to Sears and Kmart.
Oh, that's nice.
So that is who owns Sears and Kmart right now. So Kmart is also rebranded and is now called Transformco.
Transformco. I never.
So you will never see it.
Transformco.
You will never see a building named Transformco anywhere in the world because it is an online brand.
Oh.
So like how Toys R Us went bankrupt and you will never see a Toys R Us or Baby R Us anymore. Because now when companies file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, instead of building stores, brick and mortar stores, they go directly and sell online.
Wow, I mean, as they should, though, you know, but I do miss my brick and mortar.
Yeah, so, I mean, brick and mortars are more for, like, grocery stores. I'm assuming now Best Buy is also closing a bunch of stores, too, because they're just planning to make their stores, like, showrooms instead of, like, where people can buy. So, mm-hmm. You walk into Best Buy. And this is obviously in the future. You walk into Best Buy and you look around and you find something that you like and you want to buy. I'm pretty sure that the app that you're going to use is the Best Buy app, which is what they're betting on to buy the product. So you basically go to the store and you see what you want, and then you go to the app and you click on the product, or you scan the QR code next to the product, and it gets shipped to your house.
Really?
Yes. That is the future of shopping now.
What, I don't know. I like that. Don't you like that?
So instead of being like a store where you can buy stuff, it will be like a dealership, like a car dealership where you can go look around and you can buy it and it will be shipped to your house. So that is what the future of retail is looking like online. You have online shopping, of course, like Amazon, but you're also looking at like all of these stores, like Best, like all these specialty stores, like Best Buy, Bed Bath & Beyond, Target. They're all going to move to this showroom model once more people like are accepting, and they will do it very slowly and gradually, but it will come. Just like in the last episode, we talked about the decline of the United States. It will eventually come. This will eventually come too. So be prepared, future shopping.
Everyone be prepared for that.
You heard it here, folks. The Michigan Hidden History Podcast, where we're talking about the future of shopping because of Kmart. And yes, so that is what we discussed here today, is the future of how shopping will look like. Right. To celebrate the 25th anniversary of SS Kresge, he created the Kresge Foundation in 1924. He wanted the foundation to promote the well-being of humanity. He was involved in his foundation and wanted to leave the world a better place than he found it. So now we know why he stepped down as president from his company in 1925, was to focus more on his foundation. So he established institutions to build teaching, healing, and the arts. In 1984, the foundation moved to the site that it is now. By 1966, when he died, he gave away over $60 million, which is over $520 million today. And he still had a net worth of $175 million, which is $1 billion in today's money. Yes, you heard me correctly. If Kresge was still alive today, his net worth would be... he would be a billionaire if he was still alive today. That blows my mind. How much money he made off of the five and dime stores and Kmart and all that stuff. He was a billionaire. But yeah. Mario.
No,
so
yes.
So there is a Kresge Library at Oakland University. There's a Kresge Library at University of Michigan. Now we know what the name means. But when you went to Oakland University, did you know who Kresge was or what he did?
What? What did he do?
No, when he went there, did you know what he did for a living? Or did you just see a name and say, oh, there's a random guy's name on this building. I could care less.
No.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no information about this guy in the library. I'm pretty sure that there is information, but we never thought to go looking for it.
No, I wouldn't have.
Well, now you know who he is and what great things he accomplished here.
Well, there should be more information on it, you know? But, you know, this is the thing that they should be teaching. You know, maybe in fifth and sixth grade, right? Because this guy, he's important.
This dude shaped the landfill for stores. Basically, he did. Like, oh my God. Imagine if he wasn't here. Imagine what stores would be like.
Oh, they wouldn't, you know.
They would be disastrous. Oh my God. I wish that they taught these things to kids in like elementary school, in middle school, in high school. Like sometime, like the names of famous people that lived in the area of Michigan or just general Michigan should be taught to students. Like, did you know that the very first black woman who owned land anywhere in the United States lived in Pontiac?
That is crazy.
Did you know? No godforsaken person would know that unless you were in my unless you're a student who was in my student teaching year last year. And I made you listen to that podcast for homework for Black History Month. And took notes for it, by the way. Matter of fact, I bet some of you even know who I'm talking about. I forgot the name. I have to go back into my episodes. But yes, the first black woman to own land anywhere. Black woman anywhere. In the United States, was here in Michigan. And that is not known. We know about Rosa Parks. We know about Martin Luther King Jr. We know about Malcolm X. But how do we not know the first female black woman to own land in the United States? That is something that is way more important than anything else that I think that we learn about in school.
No, I can agree more with you. I think we should learn, you know, more about other than, you know, MLK and Rosa Parks. I mean, they're obviously big topics, but I think we need to learn more, you know, other topics that actually changed, that made a big impact on the way, you know, the world.
like, yes, Rosa Parks and MLK did make a big impact. But owning land back in the 1800s was something that a black person, or African-American person, sorry for those that get offended if I say black person, but African-American people could not do. They simply could not own land. And if they did, I was listening to a podcast about Malcolm X, and he lived in Michigan. How is that not covered in schools? He lived in Lansing, Michigan, and when his dad went to buy a house, the white people in that house would not sell to him at all because of the color of his skin. And this is Lansing, Michigan. This is in the 1900s. Not the 1800s, but 1900s in the capital of Michigan, would not sell land, would not sell a house to a black person.
See, I guess the legislation doesn't think that it's important enough.
Like, honestly,
we
as teachers should not care what the legislatures say or what they we should to a certain extent, but we should create a curriculum that makes children proud to be Michiganders. Right now, I can tell you, before I started this podcast, I was not proud to be a Michigander. There's no reason to be proud of being a Michigander, because all you learn about in Michigan history is about the people who come here, settle down, and create economies like timber or the auto industry. That's all you learn about. You go to the Capitol, you see the Capitol, you take a tour of the Capitol. I know I did that when I was young. They don't do it anymore because of COVID, but that's what we did. And I felt very disappointed as a Michigander for not learning about the history that I'm talking about right now.
Well, I'm in the same boat as you. I think it's needs to change what we learn in our curriculums. And I know if Ms. Dornbus is listening, I know you agree too. So I mean, when I mean Thrawn, are not the only ones.
So Ms. Dornbus, so some background information, if you don't know, is a professor at Oakland University that was both our history and social studies professor. So
listen, she's the best professor in history. So I mean. We had to add that.
So if you're listening, Dr. Dornbus, a shout out to you. But yes. So this conversation has kind of devolved, but yeah, I feel like and I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that feels like that. If you're into Michigan history and if you would like to learn more about it, obviously follow my podcast, and obviously if I'm gonna start a new program, which I'm gonna start up soon but not now, I'm still thinking about how to do the logistics over here, but it's gonna be a program where people all over the state can send me pictures of historical markers, and I will cover them in the podcast. Because I am one person, and I cannot go out to all the places that have markers and take pictures of them and write a script and do a whole podcast about it. It is honestly hard to do that. But I'm still thinking about how to do those logistics, so not yet. I'm going to announce that program soon, like within a couple of months. But just a heads up for our listeners who are within the state of Michigan, that is coming up. Also, we need to get back to the podcast at hand.
Yes,
so we're going to go through his descendants, and then we're going to go through what happened with his partners next. So stay tuned for that.
Now, back to it. He was married three times, but all of his children were with his first wife, Anna Harvey. He had five children. His oldest son, Stanley Sebastian Kresge, had one child, who was also named Stanley Sebastian Kresge Jr. He lived until July 3rd, 2017, and lived in Perrington, Michigan, which is a small village of 393 people as of the 2020 census. He has eight children, 44 grandchildren, yes, 44 grandchildren and 34 great-grandchildren. What a huge family there. If they all lived in the town of Barrington, they would make up 21% of the village population. The good thing is that none of his children were named Stanley Sebastian, but there is no promise that the one of his grandchildren is called Stanley Sebastian. The youngest daughter, Amy Elizabeth Kresge, had a son named Hugh Breckenridge, who died on January 14, 2011. He had two sons and lived in Irvine, California.
All right. So I know not everyone is thinking this, but when I was writing it, I thought about it. So what happened to his partners and the person who influenced him? So F.W. Woolworth closed his stores in 1997, but before that, in 1974, he acquired a company that would eventually become Foot Locker. Yes, that very own Foot Locker that you see in malls, that you see in strip malls, that you see anywhere. That Foot Locker came from F.W. Woolworth. Genius idea. J.G. McCrory, his first partner, his stores lasted until 2002. So for 120 years, they were in business. And none of the J.G. McCrory subsidiaries made it through bankruptcy. And I couldn't find anything on Charles Wilson, his second partner and brother-in-law. But he probably had a quiet life after working with SS. Because working with a millionaire and a billionaire could be stressful if you know how they act and how they and how they live. Don't you agree, Mario?
I don't know if I would wanna, you know, work with them unless it was, you know, a great project. But yes, you're working with any type of billionaire. Yeah, it takes a lot of you know, patience and effort.
Yep. I hope you enjoyed the podcast on the Kresge Foundation and the person behind the foundation, SS. You can listen to this wherever podcasts are found. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at MI Hidden History. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple and rate the show on Spotify. And this week's quote is, having a purpose is the difference between making a living and making a life. And that was said by Thomas Thys.
And happiness is the only thing that multiplies when you share it.
I'll see you next week. Let's make Michigan history great again. And thank you to my guest and partner in crime, Mario, for joining me once again. He may join me for one more podcast, and that may be it for a while. So, yes.
No matter what the future brings, it's always a blast with you, Theron, on these shows. We learn everything. We learn new things every day. It's always fun, man.
Yeah, I mean, I always have a blast with you, and especially you, just because of all the great conversations we have. Like, last time we talked, I even forgot what we talked about last time, but this time we talked about teaching the what we should be teaching to kids, and hoping that it gets through a legislature that we should incorporate more Michigan history rather than less in the schools. Also about the future of shopping and where it's going.
Yeah, and I hope, yes, any young kids listening can learn from this show, man. Go on some historical marker runs. The best thing to do in your free time, find some markers and learn about history.
Yeah.
History is the greatest.
Please do, because if we don't preserve our history like this, no one will. And the Michigan Historical Society does so much to preserve these markers and to preserve the land that we need to do our part and show that we care about these markers when you listen to this podcast. And if you share it with your friends and family who enjoy listening to history podcasts, please do that, because that's the way that I can grow this. And make sure that you do everything in your power to make Michigan history great. See you next week, and thank you for listening.